Welcome to episode 124 of Angela Watson's Truth for Teachers. I'm your host, Angela Watson, and I'm here to speak life, encouragement, and truth into the minds and hearts of educators and get you energized for the week ahead. Today, I'm sharing four ways teachers grappling with chronic pain or illness can maximize their productivity. Visit truthforteachers.com to get the transcript, links to recommended resources, and to share your thoughts on the show. So this episode is brought to you by Screencast-O-Matic. It's an easy-to-use screen recorder and video editor tool that makes flipped and blended learning super simple for teachers. So you can record your lessons, give kids video assignments, send video announcements, and more. And there's a Screencast-O-Matic video editor that will allow you to add text and image overlays, animations, all kinds of awesome things, as well as publish directly to Screencast-O-Matic. So everything that you need for video production is all there in one tool. You can get started with a 50% off year subscription at screencastomatic.com/teach. So this was an episode that I have been putting off for a long time because it's not something that I've had a lot of personal experience with. However, I hear from teachers on at least a weekly basis who are struggling with chronic pain and illness and just want to know how to adapt my productivity strategies and my work-life balance advice for a season of their life in which they're just not feeling like they're at their best. The fact is, almost everyone is going to experience this kind of challenge at some point in their career, whether it be from a difficult pregnancy or recovering from a surgery or grappling with an issue that's a little bit more ongoing. So I've given this a lot of thought, and I have four key strategies that I think will be helpful in these kinds of scenarios. Now, a disclaimer, of course, I have zero medical training. I am absolutely unqualified to give any sort of medical advice. So please consult with your physician before taking action on anything that I recommend here. I am speaking solely from my experience working with teachers in the 40-hour Teacher Workweek Club who have faced these challenges and who have found ways to adapt and thrive. So we're going to talk about four strategies. And the first one is to create a plan for how you're going to handle daily routines on high energy days, normal energy days, and low energy days. It's important to start by embracing your current energy level and your current productivity level and doing that without judgment. It is what it is. This is the new normal for right now. Maybe not for always, but for now, you're dealing with an ongoing issue, a chronic issue, and you need to have a solid plan for managing it. So you can think of this in terms of high, normal, and low energy days, or low pain, normal pain, high pain days, whatever phrase is helpful for you. But the idea is to have three categories and decide in advance how you're going to approach your day based on where you fall in that category. Now, it's important to identify these three plans in advance and create systems for each of them because often when you're ill, it just feels too taxing to make decisions and your problem-solving abilities are kind of impaired. So knowing ahead of time how you're going to operate that day takes the guesswork out and it allows you to fall back on pre-established routines and habits. You need to share or even better, co-create this system with the people that you live with, as well as family and friends, so that they don't have to tiptoe around you or constantly keep asking how you're feeling. Set up a code of some sort. So all you have to do is say, it's a low energy day, or something similar to that, and they'll know exactly how you plan to manage your time and energy and what they need to do as well. So for example, another adult in your household might know that on a low energy day, she or he is going to be responsible for picking up dinner on the way home from work, or cooking and washing the dishes that night. Sit down and create this plan together so that every person involved knows what their role is and no one has to guess what it is that you need from them. You might even want to share some variation of this with your students. I can't tell you how many teachers have commented on how their students were really their angels during times of physical pain. Many kids get extremely protective of their teachers when they know that we aren't feeling well, and they will spring into action to help you lift heavy objects or quiet the class down and just other things that they know are draining your energy. So it's okay to let kids know that you're feeling off that day, that you're having a low energy day. Let them know that means you won't be sitting on the floor with them or you won't be walking around during group work, whatever that means in your situation. Bring kids into the plan so that they can work with you rather than just trying to pretend that everything is the same every single day and forcing kids to try to figure out on their own how you're feeling and whether you're going to be up to certain demands or activities. So have this plan in advance for how you're going to handle your daily routines and bring in the people around you so they know what their role is too. That's the first strategy. The second strategy is to find a teaching buddy that you can turn to and tell him or her specifically what you need. It's always tricky trying to decide how much to let others into the battles that you're facing with your health. I've heard a number of teachers advise that you should first contact your teachers' union and possibly even JAN, J-A-N, which is the Government Job Accommodations Network. So if you have a disability, consider reaching out to JAN. Getting their help or the help of your union will help you figure out more about your rights and your responsibilities before you make your administrators aware of your illness or before you request ADA accommodations. Now, depending on your school culture, it might be very helpful to let your principal and teammates and selected others you work with know about what you're going through. One teacher I talked with about this said it this way. She said, "Explaining the situation to my colleagues helped them understand the position I was in for that season of life. And it helped them have understanding and compassion when I couldn't do more than the basics. They were also willing to lend an extra hand when I needed it, knowing that I wasn't able to do as much during that time." Now, a strong support network is obviously key, but we know reality is that not everyone has this community of people they can rely on. Not everyone has teammates or principals like that. Fortunately, just having a single person in your school building can really make a big difference. So when you have a teammate that you're comfortable with who says, "Let me know if there's anything I can do to help," say, "Yes, there is one thing you can do," and spell out exactly what you need right then and there. You might ask your colleague to be available to combine your class with theirs if you have to leave early or if you need a break midday due to an emergency. Or maybe you'd like someone to take over lunch or recess or dismissal duty so that you can sit down and rest instead of being on your feet during those times. Think about the responsibilities that are draining your energy the most, and think about how others on your team might be able to help out with that. You can either split the responsibilities amongst several people who tell you, "I'm happy to help out, let me know if I can do anything." Split the responsibilities among those people. Or if you just have one person, pick the most impactful thing and ask him or her to take over in that area. Now, most people don't want to take this advice to lean on others for help because they're worried about unfairly burdening their colleagues. But there will come a time when you can help them out, maybe by making their photocopies or by sharing some lesson activities that you planned. A strong coworker relationship functions a lot like a strong marriage. If either party is keeping score or tracking who does more for the other, someone is bound to get resentful. So don't play that game. Don't try to match every act of generosity from your coworkers. Accept their help during your time of need and know that you will return the favor in their time of need. Focus on showing appreciation rather than trying to reciprocate for right now. So for example, if you stop to get coffee on the way to school, pick up an extra one for your colleague. Those little expressions of gratitude will mean a lot, but you don't have to feel like you have to return every single gesture of kindness that they do. So have that plan for what you're going to do on your low, normal, and high energy days. Have a teaching buddy that you can turn to. And third of all, listen to your body and stop before your body forces you to stop. Here's the thing about pain. Pain is designed to be a useful signal from your body that something is wrong and needs to be fixed. It's very tempting to pop painkillers or Advil even, just something, you know, not necessarily some super strong drug, but, you know, lots of people just pop an Advil and they keep on moving at their normal pace. But all you're doing is dulling your body's message that the underlying problem isn't being addressed. Think about what happens when you warm your hands over an open flame. At some point, your fingers become so hot that you feel forced to move your hands away, right? You could anesthetize yourself so that you don't feel the heat, but you'd still get burned. You have to move away from whatever it is that is creating the physical pain, not just try to dull the sensation of pain. So getting in tune with your body is absolutely key. Most of us need to spend less time Googling what random people on the internet say to do and more time being still and present in our own bodies and observing the effects of our choices. How do you feel when you push yourself to keep going even though you know you're tired? How do you feel when you eat a certain type of food? What effect does a certain type of exercise have on you? How does your body respond when you get more or less sleep? Notice these things and write them down so that you can begin to uncover patterns about what works for your body and what doesn't work for your body. Everyone's body is different, and illnesses impact different people in different ways. So invest your time and energy into noticing these patterns for your own body. It's one of your top priorities right now. Because when you can figure out these patterns of what works for you and what doesn't, that's going to enable you to get well again, or at the very least, manage your symptoms. Nearly every illness is compounded by stress. So observe your stressors. Journal about them too, if that helps. Get really serious about cutting toxic influences and toxic people out of your life. As you learn what your body needs, and you observe the consequences of not giving those things to your body, you're going to find it's much easier to say no and to stop before your body forces you to stop. One of the biggest mistakes people with chronic illness make is forcing themselves to keep working or keep being productive when they are experiencing clear signs from their bodies that they need to quit or they need to slow down. Even when you're not ill, it's always better to stop for the day before you hit that exhaustion point. If you work yourself to the absolute limit, you're not likely to have a great day the following day because you overdid it. So instead of having two moderately productive days, you're going to end up with one awesome day and then one day in which you can barely get out of bed. Those kinds of ups and downs are stressful not only for you, but for everyone around you, including your students. So pace yourself and stop while you still have a little bit of energy and focus left. The fourth and final strategy is to create a set time each evening, after which you will do nothing but rest. I've said many times that rest is not a break from productivity, it's the catalyst for it. So it's no surprise that sleep is showing up here as the final strategy. Sleep is also the time when your body is best able to heal itself. So it really has to be a priority when you're ill or when you're in pain. Now, this is something that everyone knows to do, but very few people actually follow through on. So let's talk about what this actually looks like if we're really going to prioritize rest and sleep. To prioritize simply means to create time for. So put sleep and rest first. Sleep is not something optional that you can skip if you have papers to grade. And it's also not a reward from when your entire to-do list is done, and therefore something that you could just keep and withhold from yourself until you've met this list of demands. You have to prioritize it. Schedule it in first. Don't wait until you've accomplished everything in order to make time for it. Here's what you're going to do. Change around your evening routines. So the tasks that you would usually do right before bed now get done earlier. So if you set up the coffee pot or lay out your clothes, tidy up the kitchen, those sorts of things that lots of us do in the evenings, don't wait until right before you're headed to bed to start tackling those tasks. Do them earlier, so maybe right after dinner. The idea is to allow yourself to mentally and physically shut down much earlier in the evening, instead of resting for a little bit and then trying to get back up and be in active productivity mode again right before bed. So for example, you might decide that anything productive you're going to do must be complete by 8 p.m. That might be your cutoff. And if it's not done by then it just won't get done that day. Life will go on. 8 p.m. is your deadline. And after that, you're going to do nothing but restful activities. You're going to relax with your family. You're going to read. You're going to watch movies, whatever is relaxing for you. Do the same thing for your bedtime. So by 9:30 or 10 o'clock, whatever time makes sense for your body, you must be in bed. And I find that it's helpful to make being in the bed the goal instead of being asleep, because the more pressure that I put on myself to get X number of hours of sleep per night, the more stressed out I get if I'm not asleep on time. So I'll lay there and I'll get more and more anxious and more worked up as I think about how few hours of sleep I'm going to get. I'll be like, well, I've been laying here for an hour. Guess now I'm only going to get 6 hours sleep. Well, now I've been laying here for another hour. Now I'm only getting 5 hours sleep. It's a terrible, vicious cycle that will just make you feel more and more awake. Don't do that to yourself. That anxious thought pattern just makes it even harder to relax. So the goal instead might be to have this time after which you will only rest, and a time after which you will only lay in bed. And while you're laying in bed, you might be watching TV or reading or whatever, but the idea is that you've put yourself in a position to get solid sleep. You didn't just work right up until 11 p.m. and then expect yourself to unwind in 30 seconds and be asleep by 11:01. Give yourself a chance to unwind at the end of the day so that you can sleep well. So to sum up, here are the four strategies to help you maximize your productivity even when you're ill or even when you're in chronic pain. The first one, create a plan for how you're going to handle daily routines on low, normal, and high energy days. Second strategy, find a teaching buddy that you can turn to and tell him or her specifically what you need. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Third strategy is to listen to your body and to stop before your body forces you to stop. And the fourth and final strategy is to create a set time each evening after which you will do nothing but rest. Your takeaway truth for the week ahead is this: hold yourself to a standard of grace rather than a standard of perfection. Let go of what you think you should be able to do or what you ought to be doing. Relax into that state of grace, giving yourself permission to feel exactly as you're feeling right now, allowing your body to perform exactly as it's able to perform. You can do this. And remember, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be worth it. Want more than just a weekly podcast episode from me? I'd love to also send you a weekly message of encouragement via email. I'll reach out each Sunday evening with a short message that's designed to help you feel more prepared and inspired and motivated for the week ahead. It's not a newsletter or a bunch of announcements. This goes out to over 85,000 educators. So I put just as much thought into crafting this weekly written message to my email list as I do into crafting my podcast episodes. And it's entirely unique content that you won't find anywhere else online. Just go to thecornerstoneforteachers.com/subscribe and you can sign up. That's thecornerstoneforteachers.com/subscribe.